The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by Palm Beach Atlantic University, Orlando. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, friends, and welcome to my program, Afternoons with Mike. Each and every day at this time, it's my joy to be not only with you, but to have a guest in the studio. And today I'm talking to somebody I've just met for the first time. She is a certified financial planner at her own company, at Ogden Wealth. I'd like to welcome to the program Michelle Ogden. So nice to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have we've mentioned already before we began this program that I know another CFP in town. His name is Charlie Fitzgerald. Known him for years. Prior to Charlie, I would not have really known that much about the whole field of being a CFP. But I found out from him that it is a very tough field to get into. There is a lot you have to know, and there are many, I guess you could say, hurdles that you have to overcome from a standpoint of both schooling and then all of the FCC, or not FCC, SEC regulations. There's just a lot that you have to know.
Yes, I'm so glad I didn't know that when I got into this. They say ignorance is bliss, right?
Ignorance is bliss until you have to take the test.
Right.
And then it's not bliss anymore. But you've done that, and I know you've worked in this medium, in this kind of a circle for a long time, not only for yourself, but with some other people as well.
Yes.
That is a big thing to do, and to help people, you know, the baby boomers, of which I'm one, we're getting older. And so most of us, if we're not there already, are about at that point in time where all the saving and all of the stuff that we were told we needed to do, if we didn't do it, we're in big trouble. And there's a lot of people that I know you're helping that are much younger and they've got the time. So it's really going to be exciting, I think, for our listeners to hear all about your business and what you do. But first of all, we wanted to find out about you. Tell us, where did you grow up? Where did you call home when you were a young person?
I was born and raised in Homestead, and Homestead was put on the map with Hurricane Andrew.
Yes, and maybe almost taken off the map. Yeah.
Wiped off the map. Definitely. I moved to Central Florida because of Andrew in 1992, and I've been here ever since. And I went to UCF and interned at Merrill Lynch, vowed I would never do financial advising for a living. And they say, never say never.
They never say never, because when you do, you get to eat your words, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I actually went to Charles Schwab right out of college, and that's where I, you know, learned so much. It was like 5 more years of college, and I wanted to be a CFP. Mm-hmm. And did some commercial real estate after leaving Schwab, and then I was meeting with people at night, you know, helping them pick out their mutual funds and their 401k. So my husband was the one that said, I think you need to go back and go to do financial planning again. And so I started my own firm, and the rest is kind of history. That was back in 06. I started my firm in 07, and it's been a journey, but a fun one.
Mm. Now, you were finding yourself doing that even without being a CFP.
Right. And that saying, you know, do what you love, the money will follow. Or, you know, if you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life.
That's right. I've heard all those phrases.
They're so true.
And
yes,
they are not only true, but they're functionally true for people like yourself who, you know, I think finding that sense of what is your passion and what you really enjoy doing. That adage that you just mentioned, that you're not really working anymore, when you find yourself doing what you get to do, and that's kind of the way I feel right now. I'm getting to be, you know, with people, which I'm a people person, and I started off my career in radio, and so here I am back again. It's really fun to get to do what you want to do.
It's awesome. I say I get to play in the sandbox all day long.
Yeah. Paul Harvey, he was the first person that I ever heard, the old radio commentator, and he became a TV commentator. He said, I am one of the few people I've ever known. That's a funny way of saying that. That gets to do exactly what I want to do with whom I want to do it. And he considered that one of the biggest perks of his life.
I can kind of agree, you know. Mm-hmm. I just feel so blessed that I get to give my gifts daily and people thank me and pay me and yeah. just like pinch me.
Yeah, that's great. Well, that's wonderful. Tell us about your life in the South area down around Homestead, because I agree with you. I had never heard of Homestead. We've all know where Miami is, and Homestead is just really kind of part of the south part of Miami. And
you go through Homestead to get to the Keys. That's yeah, pretty much what everybody
knows. Would have known that.
Yeah.
But no one, Hurricane Andrew really changed the whole landscape literally in that area and almost, like you said, almost wiped it off the map.
Yes. I went to school in Miami because there really wasn't much in Homestead. My dad was military. The Homestead base was there. Mm-hmm. But I went to Westminster Christian in Miami. And I was in, I think from second grade to when Andrew hit, I moved up here and went to Winter Park High School. But yeah, it was a great place. I loved living in Homestead. It was country. We had 10 acres. It was just a beautiful place to grow up. I don't know if it's that way anymore. I haven't really returned other than going through it to go to the Keys. But it was a great place to grow up.
Now tell us about what happened on the day that it came through.
Oh, well, it was at night, and my dad had built our house, and he knew there was 20 tons of concrete. He invited my mom's best friend, Deborah, over to stay at the house because it was going to be a bomb shelter, which it really did because it leveled a lot of houses, and our house did stay. Parts of the ceiling or the roof were blown away. Really transformed my life because I realized all this material stuff doesn't matter. You know, it was one of those moments in time where I was like, you know, all of this can be replaced. Life cannot be replaced. And I think, you know, I take that approach into planning as well. It's more about return on life, not just your return on your investments. And it shaped me because I actually like kind of get nauseous with the materialism that we have in the world where people just like think that they need the bigger house and the bigger car and all of this stuff. And it's like, what is it all for? It's not going to, you know, bring you joy. You might think so. I had to learn on my own. I bought the ridiculous Hummer in 2009. And 2 weeks later, I was nauseous. I was like, why did I do this? I mean, the Bible says, do not conform to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And I was so mad at myself that I wouldn't let myself sell it for 3 years. I was like, going to make myself suffer. But we all have to go through those experiences to gain the wisdom that, you know what? It's not the next house or car mm-hmm. or outfit that you're going to grab at the mall. It's not about that stuff. It's truly about contributing and giving of your gifts and talents on a daily basis that renews your soul.
I'm sure that when that storm was blowing in and you're there in that house, number one, it's amazing to realize that your dad built something that was so effectively and durable that it made it through with some damage, but it made it through. It still protected you during the storm.
It did, yes. And it was traumatizing. And I remember I wrote many reports through high school and college on, you know, weathering the storm because I kept journals of, you know, every day because we stayed for about 5 days after the storm because we couldn't get out. We were on 10 acres and all the trees were down.
Yeah,
so I don't know why I thought when we got to the road that we'd be able to like drive down the road. I'm like, we got out of our property, but now we can't get down the road. So it took 5 days to get off of our own property and up to Winter Park.
Wow.
It was crazy.
Yeah. So he sold it immediately after that storm?
No, I went to Winter Park High School under the assumption that I was going to go there so I didn't fall behind. And then I came home one day, probably 3 or 4 months later, and my parents were celebrating. We sold the house as is. And I'm like, what?
Wow.
I was like, I thought this was a temporary.
Well, yeah, well, I'm sure he could find a buyer for a house that withstood those winds.
Yes.
That had to be a pretty good home for somebody down there. And, you know, I'm sure I had some friends that went down to Homestead right immediately after. And you said it hit there where you were at nighttime, but it lasted into the next day. And I know that by late morning, it was still going on.
Yes. And I think it was God's grace. If we saw that storm out our windows, oh, that would have been horrible. I mean, there was a horse trailer that was twisted in air and plunged 6 feet into the ground at a neighboring property. I'm like, if I had seen that, because there was tornadoes ripping through all around.
Yeah. So you have what it was like almost 200 mile an hour winds, almost.
Yes.
Category five.
Yeah. And they said the Homestead Hurricane Center was destroyed at like 200 miles. So I don't know if they really truly have the fastest wind speed on record.
But then you mentioned tornadoes, and it's not any weird thing or unusual thing for a tornado to carry with it a walloping 250 mile an hour winds or more.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a tornado added to a hurricane. That's a pretty lethal punch right there when it comes to damage and just the devastation to an area. But again, our friends that went down and they took just pallets of water and other supplies just as a humanitarian quick help effort. And I think when they got down there, they were rather overwhelmed just the devastation that was everywhere.
Yeah, it was traumatizing because I was 16. And I remember I left my house to take Deborah home because her house got leveled. And I couldn't find my way back because I always looked at, you know, those
icons. Landscapes are gone. I mean, the landmarks are gone.
I was lost and I was like, I'm not sure how I'm going to get back.
That's funny. Yeah. Were you a believer at the time?
Yes. Actually, I was, you know, born and raised. I went to Christian school, like so many people, baptized as a baby, just didn't really have that, you know, I was lost and now I'm found kind of moment until I had children. Yeah, that was when I started putting to practice all the Bible classes.
Yeah, it's a practical need. I think every mom can relate to what you're saying.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, that's it. So you did know the Lord during this time.
I was praying. I think that was probably like, you know, I prayed every day, breakfast and dinner or at bedtime. But I think I prayed the entire time. The whole pray without ceasing was definitely my theme for Hurricane Andrew.
Yeah. Did you sleep that night at all?
No, no, not at all.
Oh, my goodness. Because I know, again, it went on into the next day. And when it was all over, it took, and obviously for your folks, they really didn't ever restore themselves that house to where it had been before the storm.
Right. They actually made out because they collected the insurance and they sold the house as is. And even to this day, I've looked up the house and I'm like, yeah, although I was mad at you for about a year, you did the right thing financially.
Yeah, it was a good call.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Did you know anybody that died in that storm?
No, I did not.
Well,
we only heard,
good.
You know, hearsay of someone, but nobody personally.
Now, why was it Winter Park that you moved to from Homestead?
My mom is one of seven. She's the oldest. And four of her siblings lived in Winter Park. So we would always come up to Winter Park to visit.
Ah, so that explains
that. And again, you know, I say the word is the wand. I remember when I was younger, riding bikes through Winter Park, who doesn't love the brick streets, and thinking, oh, I wish we could live here. Of course, when I was 16, I was like, why are we moving?
Right.
But I was like, I remember saying, I wish we could live here every time we visited.
And now you do.
I know.
Yeah, that's funny. That's funny. And it is such a different area, though, is it not, from what you grew up with?
Yes. In South Florida, everything's a grid. So you can cut over to any street. And when I moved here at 16, there was always a lake. And I was like, I thought I knew where I was going. Now I'm lost. And there was no cell phones at the time.
Yeah, that's right. That's
so
right.
I was like,
exactly.
I'm just going to pull over and cry for a little while and feel sorry for myself. And then I'm going to regroup and I'm going to find my way home.
You know, that is the funny thing. Now, this would be people who live here, they're going to think this is the weirdest thing. But I grew up in a city that had a grid as well. And it didn't matter where you were in the city. You could always take a quick right and then a left and then maybe another right. And then you could get down to the street that you were going to avoid all of the lights or traffic or whatever it was. And I did that very thing off of Lee Road. I thought, well, I've got to cut over here to 1792. I'm going to take a quick into this and just avoid this traffic that was in front of me before 1792. And I got hopelessly lost in a neighborhood.
Going on an adventure.
And you mentioned it. There are lakes everywhere and the dead ends are everywhere. And I thought this was the worst decision of my month so far.
The worst was the one-way streets downtown. I'm about to turn on a one-way.
How do I get there? I have to go all the way around the world to get back here again. I mean, that's what you feel like at times, isn't it?
Definitely.
Welcome to Winter Park. That's right.
Thank you.
And that's where we're sitting even as we record this. We're in a part of Winter Park, this area where our guest today who came in all the way from, I mean, we could say that the winds blew you northward, and that's what happened when you guys moved up here.
Yeah,
it's great. Michelle Ogden is my guest. And just before we take a break, I think it would be good that we just make sure that everybody knows that Michelle is a certified financial planner. And there are a lot of regulations about any times that she talks about business that we want to make sure that, first of all, we are not being compensated, nor is Michelle being compensated by anything, and there's nothing implied or intended to pass along to the other. We're just hoping that her being here with you is certainly a blessing, and that what advice that you may hear from this will be a blessing to you in your life. But there's no personal gain on either side of this party. So that's always an important thing. Got to keep the people happy who have to have the hard job of regulating all of that.
Yes.
Because there's a lot in our world that has to be regulated.
Mm-hmm. And I think we need more regulation. I honestly do. It's crazy that there's so many different avenues of finance and people don't recognize if someone is really just a salesperson and they're being compensated, you know, on a commission basis or something like that. It's like you should always ask if they're a fiduciary. That's the key word.
Yes.
That means they have to put your needs over their own, not their bank or their brokerage or whoever it is they work for.
Mm-hmm.
They have to put your needs first.
And these are times that a lot of people are both able to make money, because this is one of those times to where you think about it. If you own something, what you own in terms of real estate, if you were a real estate person, there's probably not too many times that you could look back and find a time when it's more of a seller's market than it is right now. But whenever that happens, that means that there's risk for the people who are buying.
Absolutely.
And so we live in a, like you said, we live in a day and an age where risks abound. But that's part of what life is, isn't it?
Right, absolutely.
We have to take on a little bit of those risks to live, my friends. And my guest today is Michelle Ogden, and we'll be back with her in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike. Don't go away. This is The Shepherd.
You've had this feeling that there has to be more to work than just work. You have a job, but what you really long for is a career, one that makes you feel like you're actually making a difference in the world. At Palm Beach Atlantic University, they understand that your career journey is unique. PBA's Orlando campus offers respected programs with personalized instruction from a Christian worldview that empowers you to realize your goals and career opportunities on your terms. Start your new journey today with Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando at pba.edu. That's pba.edu. Your degree, your way. pba.edu.
In the studio with me is Michelle Ogden. Michelle is a certified financial planner. And if you're not familiar with that term, basically what that means is that she works with people. She is certified in the sense that she has the proper the training and the proper licenses to give advice. And she does that to help people plan their financial future. And that is something, Michelle, you know, I think a lot of times we have heard the terminology, people living on Social Security, people trusting in what their either Social Security income would be or whatever. And that was all they did. And a lot of people got to that age and realized that what they had thought life would be like, it was a lot different and they weren't as ready. So you would be one that really you spend your life as a CFP person helping people get ready for that eventual time, because it's going to come.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, It's one of those things that retirement is completely unbiblical. And no one is supposed to be doing something that they can't stand to the point where one day they want to quit. So I like to reframe sometimes the whole concept of retirement. So if someone has not saved, they have, let's just say $50,000 and they're 55 years old and they're thinking they're going to retire in, you know, 5 years, what do they do? They need to reframe what their desires are. What are their goals? Mm-hmm. Because like myself personally, I'm doing what I enjoy and what I love to do, and I'll never retire. You know, I want to do this until the day I die, because I feel like if I did sell my business tomorrow, I wouldn't have any purpose. I wouldn't have a reason to get out of bed, and I'd probably manifest some weird illness and die within weeks. You know, I mean, because I am so passionate about getting up every day and helping people pursue their preferred future. And people spend more time planning for a birthday party, a 40th birthday party. How many weeks or months do you spend putting together that versus really sitting down and saying, what do I value? What do I love? Who do I want to spend time with? What does that look like? You know, what is your why behind why you work so hard? I also have a saying that, you know, people don't normally marry for money, but why do we work for it? You get married because you fall in love and you want to build a life with someone. And when you're trying to figure out what you want to be when you grow up, it should be completely led by what's inside of you that is dying to come out of you.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people go to the grave with their gifts unwrapped inside of them.
What do you think is the biggest cause for this? I guess it was like an apple that was put out in front of the eyes of people many years ago about retiring and getting a gold watch. I mean, I have all these images that I've grown up with, and thinking about the goal is that you hit 65 and you're done.
Well, that was because in manufacturing, you worked at the Ford dealer, you know, and you built vehicles for 40 years, and you're, by the time you hit the 40-year mark, your body's tired. It wasn't fulfilling. And now pensions are gone. Those are dinosaurs. There's very few, you know, municipalities out there or whatever that will provide a pension. So you're on your own and figuring out, and how much do I need to be saving? And the cornerstone of planning is, what does it cost to live? And mm-hmm. a lot of people don't know that. I've had CPAs sit with me, literally their clients, and say, what's that number? What's that magic number? And I thought they'd know. And they're like, you know, I'm going to have to get back to you on that one. I don't know. And that's really the cornerstone of figuring out how much you should be saving, how much you should be giving, living, you know, everything.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that by and large, is it wrong to say that Americans have really walked into this season blindly?
Definitely. And I think we're being bombarded on a daily basis from social media and the news and the media telling us that we need something to fill a void, whether mm-hmm. it's a car or whatever it may be. And instead of going in and looking at what we want, you know, they say, be still and know that I'm God, and sitting with themselves and saying, you know, what do I want? What do I want in 10 years, 20 years? What does that look like? And then once you have the vision, you can move toward it. You know what I'm saying? There's, what is it called? I'm going to butcher it. But visualize, that's mm-hmm. the one.
There you go. Yeah.
Visualize. They may be lies in your mind, but they have a way of coming true.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to take the time to visualize what we want, why we want it. If the why is because of money, like I will say, I'm the first in high school, I said I was going to be a neonatologist. That was a doctor that dealt with brand new infants. And why did I want it? Because I looked at what they made. I'm human. And that's what a lot of people do. And I interviewed him and I said, what's the worst part of your job? And he said, watching a lot of my patients die. And I was like, that would break my heart. So then I went with my heart over, you know, oh, I want to make good money.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, isn't it true that how much money you make is not as important as how you handle the money that you have?
Right. It's not what you make. It's what you keep. And a lot of people, they make a lot of money, but then they compensate it because they're not doing what they truly would love to be doing. They're spending money on things that they think will satisfy them, you know, vacations and things like that, that they don't fulfill.
Well, now that being said, that's a perfect way now to jump into a question. Let's start with this one. A young person that is just out of college. And they think, and I think I understand why they think it, because I used to think it, I'm going to be around a long, 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 long time. They can't for the life of them imagine being 65 years old or 70 years old. That's not even there. They can't imagine being physically sick the way a lot of people, when they get older, they are physically ill. And they're not as strong as they are right there. You can't see that. What first step should a 22-year-old make when it comes to finances?
Well, they should avoid debt like the plague, because debt is detrimental to your dreams. You know, if you think about it, if you run out and buy the expensive car and you have this $700 payment, you're more prone to take the job that you don't like that's going to pay you more than the dream job that's going to pay you less. So if you avoid the debt situation as best as possible, that's like the first step.
And so then debt creates like a vicious circle then, right?
Yes, it's a bad cycle that mm-hmm. you get sucked into and you can't get out.
Mm-hmm.
And it accumulates so rapidly. The other thing is living. What do you really require? The war for your wallet is real. I tell my kids it daily. And I've shown them the latte factor. If you Google latte factor, there's a calculator out there.
How many lattes you're spending money for coffee that you could use that money elsewhere.
And it shows the opportunity cost. If you invested this at 6 or 7%, whatever, that coffee is like a $1 million coffee that you have an addiction to.
Oh,
I've
man.
Shown my daughter that. She still stops for tea. It drives me crazy. I'm failing as a parent, but she's 18.
That's hilarious. But it is again, hard to see how that these little decisions all accumulate.
Mm-hmm.
And if you add them all together over a lifetime,
yes,
it's crazy. That's one thing that I've always loved about Dave Ramsey, is the fact that he talks about the fact that you want to live today so that you can live differently tomorrow.
Yes.
That may be not exactly the way but we want to live with
like nobody else now.
So you can live like nobody else then.
Yes,
exactly.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's right. And that's lost on most people.
Right. But it's because it's the herd mentality. Everybody else is getting a new vehicle. I want a new vehicle too. And people don't, you know, sit and take the time to think of what's important to them, not to their best friend. You know, I've sat with people and they've said, what should I want now? Like, what should my next step be? What should my goal be? And I'm like, I can't tell you what to want. I can want what you want once you tell me. You know, my goal is your goal. But if you don't know what your goal is, then anything is going to be fine for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, how do people find out? How do you think people can be pointed to find out what it is that they truly want?
There's all kinds of things online. We have a blueprinting process that I went through 15 years ago, where I got really granular on what my priorities were. Was my time lining up with my priorities? And it's just, you have to readjust and you have to really reevaluate that on an annual basis, because things just happen. Sometimes there's someone that's sick in the family and you're devoting more time to that person.
Mm-hmm.
But the other people understand, you know, you just have to constantly reassess, realign to, you know, your time, your talent, your treasure. Everything needs to be flowing to what's important. And setting expectations with other people. You know, my girls in the office, they know where they rank. You know, they're amazing. I'm like, I couldn't live without you. I'm like, my mom's sick. I got to go.
Yeah. You know, to borrow from Uncle Dave again, because he's helped so many people. He talks about a debt snowball. If they find themselves in debt, working to get out of debt by just allowing this thing to you kind of start falling off of your radar, maybe the smaller debts first,
yes,
and then you work toward the bigger debts. How can we do that? What's the other side of that when it comes to saving? What should people do? Should they try to put up money and get an emergency fund? Would you agree with that concept first?
I love Dave Ramsey. He has some amazing baby steps and I highly recommend them. As far as savings, automate as much as possible, so that you don't have to think about it. With technology, you shouldn't have to sit down and decide if you're going to.
Now, by automate, you're talking about like an automatic deduction,
right,
from
yes,
your paycheck.
Yes.
That would go into an account or some other type of savings.
Right. automate everything as much as possible, because to me, it's just a huge waste of time. And time is the new currency. As far as I'm concerned, we only have so much of it. Mm-hmm. So we need to not be doing things like having to sit down and go, can I afford to send $100 to my savings account this month? And thinking about it, it should just be a decision you make once, set it up, and know that it's always going to be taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And know where that gets you in the long, you know, game.
Yeah. Now, another thing that really does affect savings, and you've mentioned this already with the lattes, and that is eating out. It is true that Americans eat out maybe right now at a higher rate than ever before.
And it's bad for your waist and for your wallet. It's so much cheaper to eat at home.
Yeah.
Yeah. My husband cooks chicken every night, and I used to complain about it, but now I'm like, you know what? It's really healthy.
Yeah.
And we don't have to think about it. You don't realize how much time you would spend going, what's for dinner tonight? If you just have a plan, and it's kind of like financial life, just plan, put it in motion.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is it about that is so hard to do? Now, I know that people probably look at you and they might give you a little out of the corner of their eye, like, are you serious? What do you mean about putting it into motion? That seems to some people to be very hard to get their brain around, that it can actually be that simple and that easy to plan for something and knowing that in not 2 years, but in 20 years, they're going to have more than they ever dreamed.
Right. And it's
how do you help people see that?
Procrastination is the killer of most financial plans, because time, the earlier you start, the better. I mean, there's a whole bunch of studies out there. You can see if someone starts at 20 versus 40, you know, the 40-year-old has to save three times as much and still doesn't end up with as much.
Right.
You know, you've seen all of that. I would say it's really just looking. We use technology to show into the future and to make the decision. I feel like we're so bombarded on a regular basis. We suffer from decision fatigue that we don't want to commit. Mm-hmm. We don't. And I mean, when I talk to someone and they're like, okay, fine, bump it up. And I'm like, you're never going to even notice it. You know, mm-hmm. I'm like, we're talking $50. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to think if there's like a method or I don't know.
Yeah. But
it's kind of like set it and forget it. Once you make the decision and you know it's worth the outcome, you know, and the sacrifice today,
yeah.
I try and make it a game, you
yeah.
know, like every month we can start over and play this game.
You know, something I don't hear a lot about, but there used to be money accounts that would be set up like a plan for banks where people would get ready for Christmas. So they had terms, savings account for Christmas, and people would actually do that, and they would have their Christmas budget set up by a 52-week plan.
That's beautiful behavior. I mean, Christmas comes every year. Nobody should
yeah.
be surprised by it. And why to put that on a credit card? I don't know.
Right.
But I think another element when it comes to financial planning that is huge and is a hurdle is unity in his and hers ways of spending. Because God's got a great sense of humor, and he paired me up with a spender.
Okay.
And he's the best thing. You know, I mean, we now are on the same page, you know, united and excited yeah. about where money's going. And we're in constant agreement. I say every spending decision is a spiritual decision, because mm-hmm. it all belongs to God.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think anybody wants to be wasteful and look back and go, wow, we ate $20,000 last year. Nobody wants to. But if you can have a way of tracking things and a way to look back and know that, hey, we're veering off course, we need to like rein it in and start eating from home and not eating out so much, or just it's the adjustment of the sails. You know, we're on this destination right now, we're getting blown off track. And we need to rein in the sails and reevaluate. Is it more important right now that we eat out because we have a sick family member? Whatever may be the situation, there's life always is happening.
Yeah, and
us.
I think life, before we take another break there, you answered this one. I think life catches people and puts them on this track. It's like a fast track. And they're going and they're not keeping up mm-hmm. with their finances, even 30 days out. I mean, we can say on day 5 of the month that I'm going to keep up with this. Every expenditure I make, I'm going to write it down. And by the 25th day of that month, 20 days later, That's like a long time ago, and they've forgotten all about that.
Well, that's a lot of work. I feel like there's technology out there that should just be able to report to you, where you're the boss and it's reporting to you. And there's like, You Need a Budget is a great software. I have huge fans that love that. Dave Ramsey has a program. Mint.com. I know Intuit is the owner of Mint. There's software out there that can tell you how you're doing.
And by telling you how you're doing, meaning that it will track what you've spent based on, that is if you're using like a bank card or whatever, because that's a transaction then. But if they're using cash, they've got to be careful with cash.
Right. Cash, you have to.
Because it can slip right through your fingers real quickly.
Like water.
Yeah. It doesn't take long. And so I think that would be the one of the biggest things that we can start with. It's just as simple as knowing where your money is going. And that is the discipline. And there is some of that that is hard work, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you're going to be very glad that you put some of these things into practice. My guest today is Michelle Ogden, and she's with Ogden Wealth. And we're going to be back with her in a moment for one more segment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike.
Are you looking to make a fresh career start? As Florida's top Christian college, Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando knows your faith is important to you, and it should be to your school as well. PBA Orlando offers a faith-based experience unlike any other. Whether it's a degree in leadership ministry or counseling, PBA combines biblical concepts from exceptional professors who bring years of real-world experience as leaders in their fields. Call them today at 844-PBA-ORLANDO. That's 844-PBA-ORLANDO. Education for your soul as well as your mind.
Back for one more segment with my guest today, Michelle Ogden. I find this to be such a fascinating discussion, especially at my age right now. And we were talking during the break, Michelle, and I'd love for you to weigh in on this, is that, again, a lot of people, the reason that they're not happy where they are financially, it's not so much that they're not making enough money. Oftentimes they are, but oftentimes the reason they're not happy is they think they're comparing themselves to somebody that makes 20 grand a year more or 30,000 a year more, when actually they're comparing themselves to a multimillionaire,
right?
Who might make $200,000 a year more or more, maybe 2 million a year more.
Yes.
And that's the kind of unrealistic comparison that really not only doesn't serve them, but it leads them into this state of feeling like they're living their days one day at a time, way below where they need to be. And that's just not God's will for them at all.
It's so true. And I mean, studies have shown that if your basic needs are met and you're making over, I think it's like $50,000 or $60,000 a year, there's not really any correlation. If you make 150, there's, as far as happiness and contentment and fulfillment, it's non-existent. And there's that saying that comparison is the thief of joy. And we live in a society where we're all on social media. You're watching the highlight reel of other people's lives and their vacations. And you're saying, but honey, why didn't we go do that? You know, and you're wondering like, what are we doing wrong? And you're not. You're on your own unique path. I have yet to have someone walk into my office and have the exact same goals, dreams, and desires for their family and their life as the previous person. I can never say, all right, ladies, we're going to repeat the Smith plan on this family.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
I mean, everybody's so unique. But yet there's still this comparison because of the environment that we're in, where social media is showing us a glimpse into other people's lives, and nobody's showing the bad parts. They're only showing the good stuff.
Mm-hmm. You know, there was a day, and the news reports are full of these stories right now. There was a day that people would have believed that if you work hard and have a good work ethic, you're going to make it, and you can make it. And yet today we see a time where a lot of people are being paid by the government functionally to not work.
I know.
And being rewarded.
I know. And it's really difficult because I have two kids that want to work. And I went and I saw, you know, Now Hiring right here in Winter Park at the Lombardi Seafood. And I said, you know, how old do you have to be? My son is 16. And she's like, oh, we'll hire him. Have him. You know, she goes, do you want to take him an application? And I said, no, he can come get it himself. I am not going to do all the heavy lifting. If he wants a job, he needs to come in and apply. But she said, my roommate is staying at home and making three times as much as me, but I'm here. And I was like, and you will be rewarded.
Yeah, it's a sad thing that's going on right now. And we were talking to some people in Mark Media who were aware of another area in Florida where some people were trying to find employees. And the answers that they got were, I can't afford to work. I'm making too much money on unemployment.
And it's so sad because I don't feel like we're supposed to be indebted to anyone besides God. Mm-hmm. You know, the government, yeah, they're great. And we won't get political. But we're supposed to be, he's our audience that we are to appease. And it says that work heartily as if unto the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And when you take that work away, it takes away a piece of people's soul. I mean, if you just give money to people, it's not healthy mentally, emotionally, spiritually at all. It's really a bad thing, but that's what's going on. And I mean, you can try and explain that work is a gift, you know, mm-hmm. and do it well.
When you look at everything that's going on around us right now, Michelle, what would be in your mind, what would be some of the most exciting things that people can jump into and think a way, be it a plan, as you've mentioned already, what do you think makes what you do, would make it just a joy for you to say, this is the most exciting thing that I think you can do?
Well, I think, you know, Susan Boyle in 2009 went on to America's Got Talent and wowed everyone. Or it was Britain. Britain's Got Talent.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And here she had this gift just bundled up inside of her. She knew that she had something to give the world. And I feel like everyone has gifts that they are not using. Maybe when they were raised, they were taught that they had to do the hard stuff in order to go have fun. And I remember when I realized that myself, I felt like, oh, I have to do this hard part of my job in order to have the fun part of my job. And now I recognize, no, delegate your weaknesses. Don't try and develop your weaknesses and focus on your strengths and give those away all day long. And that's what I think we need to kind of shift. We see these YouTubers making great money and they're just having fun doing what they love and giving, you know, of themselves on a regular basis, and people are subscribing to it. And I think that is what my generation needs to hear, is that it doesn't always have to be a grind. Maybe you need to do what you don't feel like doing, waiting tables, whatever that may be, to pay your bills, but be working on what really brings you, you know, joy and makes you come alive, as Steve Jobs mm-hmm. says it, at night, until that replaces your day job.
Now, that's a great starting place, because I think a lot of people, and I'm one who loves, all you have to do is ask my wife, I love YouTube videos. I'm a guitar player that really enjoy, right now at this point, I watch it not only for entertainment, but I'm always learning. I'm always trying to grow. Even as long as I've played, there's always somebody that knows something I don't know. And there's plenty, believe me, there's everybody that knows things I don't know. And you're right. When you watch these YouTube videos, some of these people have 2 million subscribers. One of the guys that I watch regularly has 2 million. Well, he had to quit his job and now he's doing that. And he is an example of what you said earlier, of finding what it is that you love to do and then jumping into that and doing it and enjoying every moment of it, only to find out that you can make a pretty decent living doing this.
And you know, the apple, the seed is already in the apple. When the seed is planted, it's going to be a beautiful apple tree. I feel like we have a lot of apple trees trying to be pear trees or peach trees.
Oh, that's good.
And it's like, wait, just take time to get to know thyself
uh-huh.
and what you love, and take that time, because right now we're inundated. The noise is so loud. And, you know, people are telling you, hey, I think you should do this or you should do that. It's like, no, what do I want? And, you know, go be selfish for a moment, because, you know, my priority is number one, God. Number two is myself. For a long time, I was number seven. And, you know, it goes that way, because I can't be a gift to anybody unless I am first paying attention and taking care of myself mentally, spiritually, emotionally, and physically.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like one of the things I tell people is, you're your biggest asset. You may think your biggest asset is that commercial property you own, but if you're gone, there's a much bigger impact. The building will be fine. Mm-hmm. Your family, you have a legacy to leave. You need to be taking care of yourself so that you can take care of others. And I feel like our gifts are neatly packed inside. We just need to unpack them.
That's excellent advice. And, you know, when you think about the people that you talk to on a regular basis, I'm sure there are some things that would be kind of constant in every situation. What would be one of those?
Well, everybody spends money.
That's right. We're all consumers.
Some people are spenders and some people are savers. I personally was an extreme saver, married a spender, but we have found our way into the middle where we're much, much better as far as it goes. But I have to really determine where someone is if they're not married. If they are an extreme spender, I need to show them this is when you run out of money.
Do you find it that extreme spenders often would argue the fact that that's what they are?
I think I allow the Holy Spirit to reveal that they're spending a little too much. I don't like to be the one to point that out.
Okay, that's
I like to show
wise.
Them, okay, this is where you're at, and numbers don't lie, you know? And it's like, hey, you can't fix something if you won't admit you have an issue. Mm-hmm. And that's the hardest thing is most people, they won't admit they have a problem, so therefore they can't fix the problem. Mm-hmm. But I feel like one of the gifts that I have is just being extremely vulnerable with my relationship with money and how it was such, I'm not where I need to be, but I'm not where I used to be. And mm-hmm. I have a very healthy relationship with money now. But for many years it was evil. You know, it was like I repelled it, even though I was saving and doing everything right. But I think that when people know that they are in a safe place and they can tell you their fears, their hopes, their dreams, and know that there's no judgment, let's just try and team up together and take you from here and baby step, you know, to where we want you to be. I'm not going to tell you, hey, you need to save half of your salary every year. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. it's unrealistic. We need to work with human behavior.
But it's easy to say, and I think correct at the end of the day, that people can save a lot more than they think
Absolutely.
They can save.
Definitely.
And
a little bit at a time.
They should save more than they think.
We all should. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is great. You know, my economics teacher in high school, every day, every week, I had him once a week, and every week his class would start off with him saying in the most dry tone that you can imagine, class, I want to make it perfectly clear that money is not the most important thing in life. But then he would pause and he would always look around dryly and say, but it is far, far, far ahead of whatever is in second place.
That's so funny.
And it was funny. And he was obviously tongue in cheek about it. And as believers, we know that's not true.
Right.
But it is far ahead how we handle money. I do believe this is true. It's far ahead of what we think it is in our own heart. And I learned a long time ago that our money in a real way represents us. My money represents the time that I worked for it. It represents my attitude about what is important in my life, and that's best seen by what I've spent my money on. And it represents the issue of stewardship,
yes,
which we're all called to be very careful about how we steward what God's given us. So it is far ahead, importance-wise, of what we might think it is. It's no small issue, is it?
No, and I think it was Zig Ziglar that said it is kind of like second to oxygen.
And we all know how important oxygen is. At least I think we do. And you know, there's a funny story about oxygen that hit my mind earlier. And I think since you said that, I'm going to jump in. You know, when you're on a plane, they teach the parents to pull the mask over their face first.
Yes.
Before their children, which a lot of people, I think, would think, well, that's silly. Mm-hmm. But if you're out, your kids are not going to make it. So we do have to do what you said. We have to watch out for making sure that we're investing the right amount of stuff in the leadership of that home. The mom and the dad needs to really be taken care of so that they can have something to give.
Yes. And there was a quote, every rich father wishes he could pass on the trials and tribulations that made him rich. And I feel like a lot of families that I have helped, they were putting the oxygen mask on the children and in the process taking away the joy of for them to earn a living. And it was like, don't ruin them. Don't ruin them. Yeah. Let them learn. Let them grow. Let them, you know, struggle. Struggle is good.
It really is sad to see spoiled young people.
They don't appreciate it. Yeah. And I feel bad for the children.
And
I
they're
really
not going to hang on to them in most cases.
Yes.
They won't hang on to it. It will slip through their fingers the same way that things have slipped through a lot of our fingers as well. Michelle, give us how people can contact you. Is that possible?
Yes. We are at thefinancialtherapist.com.
That's cool. TheFinancialTherapist.com. Michelle Ogden, my guest today. Thank you so much for being. This has been a delightful time.
It's wonderful.
It's great to talk to somebody that really has these issues, which are so important to us all, and not only at heart, but I do believe in the words of one of my dearest friends who said, there's nothing there so wonderful as kind of having these issues settled in your mind and where you can actually feel like you're not being driven by them, but that you're in control over them. And, you know, finances, that's one of those areas that we need to have control of. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
God bless you. And friends, thanks for being with me today on Afternoons with Mike.
Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by Palm Beach Atlantic University, Orlando.